with
minutes for the 4th of July.
Minutes of the 4th of July. Anybody got any comments? Do you want to approve the minutes?
Propose we accept them, Chair.
Seconder? Thanks, Doug.
You have to sign the Chair.
And apologies.
Apologies from Councillor Edgela, being substituted by Councillor Jones, Andy McNaughton, substituted by Louise Nixon, and Dee McNaughton, substituted by Julian Thorley.
Public question time?
None.
Councillor session?
None.
Members' items?
None.
Called in items?
None.
Which takes us to item one, which is officers' reports, and that's a presentation on the development management. I think Dean's going to make a presentation to update everybody on the current state of the Development Management Department. Where are you going to do it, Dean? Are you staying there? Are you coming up?
I can stay here or
whatever suits you.
I'll stay here then.
We're going to move.
Thank you, Chair. So, I think, obviously, at the last meeting, the committee said that they obviously felt that they wanted an update on development management, and particularly on performance. It is an important issue, and we recognise that there have been some significant difficulties and issues within the department over the last couple of years. But tonight I want to provide an updated position where we are with performance, set some wider context, but to set out some of the actions that we are taking to get things back on track, and particularly deal with the backlog of applications, and obviously set out an improved position for the future. So I think we recognise that applicants, agents, elected members have experienced frustrations with the planning system and particularly delays with applications. We'll explain in the presentation and during the discussion some of the reasons why we are where we are, but importantly, how we move forward. We have got a large number of applications in the system that we need to deal with, larger than we would like. But obviously, we are sorry to applicants and agents who have experienced frustration and delay. And obviously, we are working hard to address those issues. So just want to say that first, Chair, before we get into the presentation. So what we'll cover is provide a sort of general overview of development management, so we're all absolutely clear on the subject that we're talking about. As I've alluded to, provide some wider context, particularly looking at the sort of national position around planning and some of the issues that we're dealing with. We'll talk specifically around Stafford Borough Council's performance on planning, and John will go through some of the figures that are most relevant. We'll look at some of the current issues that we're facing, but importantly, we'll focus on the improvement actions and the recovery plan that we are taking forward to deal with the current situation and look ahead to the future. And I think at the end, Chair, we'll obviously be happy to take any questions on the presentation, but obviously questions from members, we'll deal with those. So, in terms of the overview of development management, it is a statutory function of the council. We are a local planning authority, and it is a key service that we are required to deliver. So in terms of development management, it covers a number of areas. Processing and determining planning applications for planning permission is the core of what the service provides. We deal with major applications and non-major applications, and we'll look at that in a bit more detail later, particularly in terms of numbers of applications and performance. But there are a whole host of other applications that we look at. We look at advertisement consents, listing building and conservation area consents, lawful development certificates, and we also have our role as planning in terms of planning enforcement. So we have those statutory functions which we discharge. It is an extremely busy team, high profile, and we have a high amount of interaction and involvement with local residents, elected members, town and parish councils, MPs, and a whole range of statutory and non-statutory consultees. So it is an important service, and it plays, should also say, an important role in delivering against our corporate priority, supporting economic development, community wellbeing, and other priorities. So, in terms of the wider context, and I think this is really important to reflect on, it isn't just in Stafford Borough where we've seen pressure and challenges. Nationally, planning departments up and down the country have seen huge increases in workload, significant pressures and changes to the planning system, changes to legislation, and those have created specific issues and challenges that we need to tackle and face. We also had a pandemic, obviously 2020-21 were particularly challenging times with the pandemic and lockdowns, and those have resulted in some of the issues that we're facing today. In recent years, local planning authorities, as I say, up and down the country, have experienced a drop in the speed of application decision making. We do have timeframes in which we must determine planning applications, whether they're non-major applications or majors, but we have seen a drop in the speed and the timeliness of those decisions. We have seen an increased reliance and use of extensions of time, and John will probably explain that a little bit more later, but where we are unable to determine applications within the agreed timeframes, we have had to negotiate and agree extensions of time with applicants and agents, and that has been an increasing trend over the last few years. We've seen a slowdown in validation times, the time it takes from receiving an application to validating it, so that it can then be processed by a case officer. And one of the areas that we have seen over the last couple of years is a real increase in household applications. So we're not dealing with necessarily large numbers of major applications, big employment sites or town centre schemes or residential developments. We're seeing an increase in smaller applications come forward, household extensions and the like. And they've placed increased pressure on the time of case officers. We've seen an increase generally in the number of objections that we receive on individual applications. And because of the frustration from applicants and agents in terms of timescales, we have seen an increase in complaints. We do get complaints in this area anyway, because applicants are not always happy with the decisions that are taken, but we recognise that we have had an increase in complaints in this area. But one of the most pressing issues really is about staff. Planners are skilled members of staff. They are very much in demand. And we are seeing a churn in the workforce, and we are seeing huge, if you look nationally, planners are able to move around to different roles, moving to higher paid roles, and that creates pressure on our service. So recruiting and retaining staff is a really key issue. The other point to note is planning fees are set nationally. We do not set our planning fees at local level, and we do not have the powers to do that. We do have some discretionary powers or ability to look at pre-application fees and planning performance agreements and things like that. But in terms of the fees that applicants pay, they are set nationally. So we're not able to cover any shortfalls in our funding for our planning department. The government has recently announced that planning fees will increase from next April. That will make a difference, but as I say, we do not have that flexibility at local level, and that has impacted on our budgets and ability to bring additional resources in. In terms of performance, we are required to measure and report performance to government on a number of metrics. We report this on a quarterly basis to the Department for Levelling Up, Housing and Communities. And largely those targets are around speed of decisions, quality of decisions. The ones that we'll pick up particularly this evening are around speed of decisions. I've said already, planning departments have faced particular challenges around speed and getting decisions determined within time. So in terms of major developments, we have a target that 60% or more applications need to be determined within 13 weeks, and non-major applications, 70% determined within 8 weeks. So those are core metrics that we are measured on. We report progress, and John will explain where we are with those in a moment. The government assessed that performance on a quarterly basis. They look at very carefully and closely our rolling two-year average across those metrics, and there are specific penalties for authorities who go under the 60% and 70%, but those are the core metrics that we are assessed against by government, so it's just important to know that. So John, do you want to go through where we are in terms of quarterly performance for majors and non-majors?
Thank you, Dean. As Dean's just mentioned, the criteria for majors is 60% within 13 weeks, and you'll see that our performance is the blue line there. So it varies from quarter to quarter. I should just point out that these, where the years are at the bottom, Q2 is the quarter March, April, May of this year. So it does vary because there's a relatively small number of major applications. We deal with around about 50 in a year, something like that. So sometimes it can be 100% if you're doing, say, three out of three, something like that. But even during that two-year period, the lowest figure that we've got to in any quarter is 60%. And the rolling average that you'll see when we come on to the next slide is 84.7%, so we're well above the 60% criteria for major applications. The non-major one is the red line. That is more difficult in the sense that there's a lot more applications. You'll see from there again that every quarter we are above the 70% criteria. And over the rolling two-year period, we're currently running at 76.7%. So again, above the threshold. If we now move on to the next slide. So in terms of the government's criteria, the 70 and 60%, as I say, we're above on both counts, and we have been for each individual quarter within 2 years, as well as for the rolling two-year period. So in terms of that, the performance is good against the government targets. The second bullet point just simply states what I've said. The majors is 84.7, the non-majors 76.7. What we had in 2021-2022 was growth in applications and workload, and we had a particular issue with backlog in validation and validating in applications. So there is a slide later on that shows the numbers. We'll come on to that at that point. But we did have a backlog of, it peaked at I think 15 weeks in 1 month, and it's roughly three weeks now, and it's been stable at that for the last about 6 months. As the backlog invalidation applications came down, then the result of that was that more applications were coming through to be processed, and more were coming through to case officers. So the caseloads of individual officers rose quite significantly. And again, we'll see that on another slide. But we had case officers with more than 100 applications each, which starts to become a difficult level to manage on a proactive basis. What we've had over the last probably 6 months or so, we've managed to reduce the overall number, and we're now managing to process more new applications within the 8 and 13 week targets than we had before without relying on extensions of time. However, there are still quite a volume of older applications that are still under consideration which clearly need to be prioritised.
Thank you. So, I think as John has outlined, in terms of performance, we do well, but we have a particular issue around the growth of planning applications, and the current numbers are high. To address that particular issue, we have set out an improvement plan, or we have developed an improvement plan with the team, which is very much focused on how we tackle the backlog and get the number of older applications, particularly ones that have been in the system for longer than 12 months, down and reduce the overall caseload to a more sustainable level. So we have been working as a team to look at service improvements, how we can streamline processes, actively managing caseloads and reviewing individual case officers' caseloads, and really with a view of speeding up decisions and getting decisions issued. That has been the primary focus over the last few months. We brought in some additional capacity to help the existing team. We have some very good planners in the team, but we needed to help them. So we brought in additional temporary resource, some experienced temporary agency planners who are working with us. And we've also bolstered the number of team leaders within the team. We have two team leaders on the establishment. We now have four, or two agency team leaders, and those individuals really are charged with working with the case officers to review caseloads, allocate resources, and really look at signing off decisions and make sure that we haven't got any bottlenecks. And that's really helped start increasing the number of decisions that are issued. In addition to the agency planners, we've also contracted with an external service provider called TerraQuest, who have been brought in specifically to help us with the householder applications. As we've mentioned, we've seen quite an increase in those over the last couple of years. And they have been dealing with the new applications coming in and absolutely focused on determining those within time. So TerraQuest have been working alongside us and working very well. Working with John, we've set up a task and finish group which has key members of the team. We meet weekly to review the performance metrics, numbers of applications that are being processed and determined, and really looking at how we can improve processes, and no idea is a bad idea. We're trying to instill that culture within the team. We've committed to provide monthly updates to the Cabinet Member for Economic Development and Planning. We're providing quarterly updates to Cabinets, and I've met with the Chair of the Planning Committee, and we will provide updates to the Planning Committee as well. So we're trying to keep members well updated on progress. In terms of the recovery plan, I think John's alluded to this, the progress is starting to be felt. We are seeing the numbers of applications on hand come down. The red line you'll see on the slide peaked around about November, December last year.
Yeah.
We got to around just over 1,000 applications on hand. We brought the additional planning resource in, as I say, brought TerraQuest in, and we've started to see those numbers come down. Some months we've seen really good progress in terms of those numbers, other months perhaps a bit slower, but I think overall the trend is positive. It is coming down, and I think the current figure, August to date, 675, I think we discussed earlier. So we're on that trajectory. John mentioned the validations earlier, which is the blue line, and you go back to sort of, I think, early 22 when it peaked. There were around about 264 applications there waiting to be validated back in March 22. We're now down to around 66, and that figure's pretty steady. So got that validation waiting time down from 15 weeks to 3 weeks, and we're continuing to try to get that down further, but we're making good progress in bringing the overall number of applications down. John, I think you're going to just talk through this slide.
These are the two important lines, in the sense that this applications received is the blue line and applications determined is the red line. So where the red line is above the blue line, we're on a positive trend. where it's the other way around, we're receiving more applications than we're dealing with. So you can see that from sort of October 21 up to October, November 22, we were receiving more applications each month than we were able to determine. But since the turn of the year, that's almost, with one exception, that's been consistently the opposite way around. So that's reflected in the graph that you saw just before this one, where the total number is coming down. So it's important that we maintain the red line above the blue line.
Okay. Thanks, John. So going forward, what we're looking to do is implement the actions that we've agreed in our recovery plan. We will continue to bring resources into the team to make sure we can get on top of the backlog and bring those numbers down. The clear focus for the team is getting decisions out, reducing the backlog and stabilising the overall caseloads to more sustainable levels and getting those figures to more normal figure is an absolute priority. So the team's working day in, day out to process applications, get decisions issued, and as I've said earlier, through our weekly meetings, by review processes, we are looking to try and speed things up as far as possible. We are looking to, we have arranged an agents forum meeting for the 6th of September. We put an invite out to 80 plus local agents. I think current numbers, we've got around 29-30 agents confirmed to attend. And what we want to do at that meeting is explain where we are at the moment with performance, the actions that we are taking to improve and bring numbers down, the speed of decision making. We want it to be very much a two-way dialogue, so we know we want our feedback from agents, want to hear what their issues are, and we will go away and try to work through some of those issues. So want it to be proactive and positive, but we recognise that, you know, there will be frustrations and concerns ahead of the meeting, and we obviously feel agents need to have that opportunity. So that meeting is in the diary and will take place. Over the last couple of weeks, we've been made aware that the government has made available £24 million nationally to local planning authorities. There's a planning skills delivery fund. It is a competitive process, and local planning authorities will be required to put an application in to government to secure additional resources. And those resources will be very much targeted on planning authorities who need to bring down backlogs of applications. So we are looking at the funding criteria at the moment, working on the application. I believe the deadline is 11th of September, and we'll get that submitted. We can bid up to £100,000. That's the maximum amount we can bid for. It will be a very competitive process. I think a lot, you know, many authorities will be putting in bit similar bids, but we will put that in, and the funding will need to be spent this financial year, so we need to get going on it very quickly if we're successful. So we will find out in October whether we have secured the money or not. In terms of other actions, as I said, the key priority is to stabilise caseloads, bring them down and stabilise. We do want to reintroduce our pre-application service that is currently suspended. We recognise that a good pre-application service is really important. It helps to improve the quality of applications that come into the team, and is very much about enabling good quality development to take place. We are having to continue to suspend that service because, as I say, the priority is on the backlog. So as soon as we're able to reintroduce that, but I would estimate that is at least 12 months away. Again, once we get through the recovery plan and stabilise the situation, we think it's important to look at best practice, and I would like to look at a peer review of the Development Management Service, bring another authority in from somewhere else in the country to come and work with us, benchmark, and it would be very much about looking at how we can improve and develop. And I think just to say, look, going forward, this isn't a sort of short-term solution of going forward. So apart from my remit as head of service across two authorities is to look at shared services. there will undoubtedly be an opportunity to look at how we can work with Planet Chase Council and look at how we can bring the teams together, but that is a medium long-term priority. We will need to look at transformation of the service and look at how we bring them together, because they are two different teams. Policies and procedures are different, IT systems are different. So that is a quite significant project that we will take forward. But the here and now is around reducing the backlog, stabilising and maintaining our performance. So that's kind of presentation, Chair. And,
thanks.
I hope that's been informative and useful. I hope members can see that we are taking action to address the current situation within development management. As head of service, I do recognise that there have been difficulties, and I'm not shying away from that, but determined that we move forward and get to a better position. So, thank you, Chair. I'm happy to take
Thanks,
any
Steve.
Questions.
Yeah. I think it'd be helpful not to dwell on endless individual cases that we've got. Deal with those separately with the officers if you've not already got them in the system. Otherwise, we're going to get bogged down with which case didn't work and which case wasn't responded to and so forth. So, Julie, first question.
What's the agents forum?
Agents forum, so typically with planning applications, an applicant will have an agent who works on their behalf and deals with the planning application. So where agents are submitting applications and we're transacting with them, we want to invite those agents to a forum so we can have a two-way dialogue. We can explain to them where we are with our improvement plan, but they can feedback their experience of working with the team, and we're open to suggestions about how we can improve things. So
they're generally architects, they're not always, but they generally are.
Thank you.
Stop, Peter Brown.
I was just going to say, are there any plans to increase the number of people on the enforcement team?
What this presentation is specifically about the application side rather than the enforcement. Enforcement's another challenge. It's obviously part of the same. But some of the issues that we've got here are common. The main one is in terms of staffing. So in 2 weeks' time, all three enforcement officers will be agency staff. We haven't got any. Well, the last permanent one moves to another role in 2 weeks' time.
With a borough.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
Yeah, it's as if we're reinventing the wheel. I mean, we go back a few years and we set up a team consisting of the chairman of planning, the cabinet member, members of John's team, and in fact Michelle was our leader. And we seem to have resolved everything because we set up a system, there's a T-card system where everything was visible. And you could follow the process through. That's when all the staff was in working, not playing at home like they are now. it seemed to work, you know, and now we just seem to have gone back and reinventing what we went through 10 years ago. Have you thought of including perhaps members of councillors on your workforce team that you're setting up?
Jack, as I said earlier, we are providing regular updates to the cabinet member and the cabinet, and we're happy and I'm happy to have conversations with individual councillors about experiences and look at where things could be improved. I think the task and finish group, which has been established, is officer led, he's very operational. We're meeting every week to go through detail in terms of performance numbers, processing. So it is an officer group, it is rolling sleeves up and trying to get on top of the issue. But I think in terms of member involvement, we're happy to provide the appropriate updates to members, but as I say, I'm also happy to have discussions with members about planning and their experience of planning, because that is valuable and provides me with feedback that I can give John and the team. So I would probably say not in terms of task and finish group, but in terms of engagement, we're more than happy to have that with members.
Just to follow on from that, in the past, members, particularly new members, have had a chance to go around the office and meet staff, and I think it'd be really helpful. Despite what Brian says, I gather, I've seen that a lot of staff are in on a Wednesday, and if members of this committee thought it would be useful to go and meet the various members of the team on the third floor, I think that would be a useful thing for everybody. And in terms of following up and so forth, I think it'd be sensible to come back in perhaps 6 months' time and look at the progress that's being made, because obviously you're making a lot of changes now, but we need to see them roll out, because even the 3 week validation time is nowhere near the government's 2 to 3 days that is being asked for. So let's see how we get on and bring it back onto the agenda here in another 6 months. What do people think?
I've got a couple of questions, if that's okay.
We've got Julian first, okay. And then I'll come back to you.
So you've mentioned about your targets for sorting out applications are now on the more correct side. You've got problems with staff, particularly being employed through agencies. Is there anything going forward long term to start recruiting these agency staff to full-time council employees? And if so, what's the criteria that we have to meet to be taken on?
If I just pick that one up, we've had difficulties in recruiting and retaining staff for the last 4 years. We've currently got, if I count enforcement as well, we've currently got 6 vacancies. And these are posts that we've advertised and not been able to fill. We do employ a number of agency staff at the moment, but they are being paid considerably more than the permanent staff, because we're paying their hourly rates. They're paid more than I am. So it's not simply a case of being able to recruit those staff to work permanently. There is a national shortage. It's one of the things that what we found over previous years is that we've had to recruit at the bottom end, and we've got 4 staff at the moment who we've recruited as effectively graduates with geography degree or something like that, and we've taken them on. They've started dealing with discharge and condition applications and that type of thing. They've progressed through householders, and one of them's now dealing with large scale applications. Two of the others are now planning officers dealing with sort of middle range stuff. As part of that, we've to be able to retain them, we've had to get them through college courses, so we've had to fund that with a training agreement, of course, which then ties them into staying with us for at least a couple of years. So that's been quite beneficial, and in my mind at least, and I'm not speaking to Dean here, but in my mind I think that's the way we need to go forward, because it's very difficult to go out and get experienced staff.
Thanks. John.
Thank you. Good evening. You mentioned Terra Quest, who's an outside agency that you're using. Are they helping with both majors and non-majors, or just non-majors?
It's all non-majors.
All non-majors, so they're just doing sort of like the quick stuff, the 8 week turnarounds.
They're doing the house extension type stuff.
Rightio. And you've also mentioned in the last slide, Cannock Chase Council. Their sort of sister department, are they of similar levels? Do they have similar issues? Are they still having a backlog like Stafford are?
I think in terms of kind of Tracy's position, you know, we talked about performance metrics and they're good as well. There's no issues there. It is a very different area. The issues actually are very similar in terms of staffing. We've got a number of agency staff working because we can't recruit. We managed recently to move somebody over from our planning policy team into development management. Actually, she's going on a training course as well. So we find it difficult to recruit. We've lost a lot of experienced staff and we've had to backfill with agency. But my preference, adding to what John said, is to grow our own and develop. It is often a case of needs must, because you've got to keep your foot on the pedal in terms of process applications and those metrics. So the numbers are smaller, the caseloads are smaller, but the level of resource is smaller because it's proportionate to the caseload. The key difference, and I don't think John minds me saying this, but the key difference is just the backlog isn't there in Cannock Chase. They've managed to keep the figures at a steady level by backfilling with agency workers, and there aren't any concerns at the moment around backlog. It's actually a different issue with Cannock Chase around access to the specialist skills that you might need, conservation, urban design, biodiversity. So there are lots of different disciplines there that we don't have that resource in-house at Cannock Chase. We might have to go external, whereas at Stafford we do. So there are different challenges, but they are, like any other planning department, busy, they're stretched, and it's a constant job to keep on top of those numbers.
So we've talked about agency coming in to look at the new applications that are being done, but then in the same kind of breath, you're also talking about trying to prioritise the backlog. So what system are we using to set the priority of importance between what's coming in now and somebody who's perhaps been waiting 2 years for an extension to be validated, finding out their next door neighbours has had less than 6 weeks? How are we dealing with that?
Okay. Well, first of all, we haven't got people who've been waiting 2 years for validation. It's 3 weeks at the most.
Brilliant.
In terms of the agency staff, we've got them doing a mixture of different things. TerraQuest are currently dealing only with new householder applications. They've been dealing only with householder applications for 6 months or so, something like that. Of the agency staff we've brought in people at different levels. And some of them are dealing entirely with older applications. Some of them are dealing with a mix of old and new ones. It's a question of trying to balance the caseload numbers with their experience and try to progress as many applications, both old and new, at the same time. There are a number of issues with some of the older applications, and particularly the larger applications where we're dependent on consultee responses from the likes of highways, the local flood authority, environment agency, people like that. And of those applications, it's not like we can determine all of them tomorrow, because there's significant issues with quite a lot of those applications. In some of the cases, we're waiting for applicants and agents to come back with further information to address consultees' concerns, for example. And then we've also got a number of those applications where we process the application to the point of a delegated resolution to grant permission, but it's now a question of a legal agreement before that decision can be issued. And again, we've got quite a few in that category to tie in. I think particularly Cannock Chase SAC contributions, which are required in new dwellings within a 15-kilometre distance of the chase. So that, for example, is delaying a number of applications that otherwise we have dealt with.
Okay, thank you.
Can I
just ask a quick question? So if we are trying to fast-track applications, trying to get through the backlog and deal with some of the major applications, can we assure our residents that it's not going to be resulting in poor, rushed decisions, the quality of the bills, the quality of the sites that we're looking at, because that's obviously not something that we want to experience.
Yes, that's certainly the case. And Dean, one of the things that Dean mentioned, if you noticed, was that we, of the agency staff, we brought in two additional team leaders. So those are people who are helping helping decide the applications, the delegated applications. Because with the additional agency support, more and more reports are getting pushed through. And we need to make sure that we've got enough people to properly look at those to ensure that the quality is there.
Thanks. Louise.
Thank you. If planning fees are fixed and you're having to unexpectedly use agency staff which are more expensive, do you know how big the funding gap is, please? Is it significant?
Say that question again, please.
You've said that the...
Are we running over budget, basically?
Yeah.
Okay, in terms of the temporary resources that have been brought in, we are using... we built up planning reserves over the last couple of years. So we've got an agreement with the Section 159 Office that we can use those reserves during this period to deal with the backlog.
And how much have you had to use? How much have you had to dip into?
So I haven't got the figure, but it's a sizeable figure.
Significant.
But we built up, I think over a number of years, John, we built the reserve when the fees were last increased.
Yeah. The last time the planning application fees were increased, they went up by 20%, but that figure was ring-fenced, so you could only spend it on planning. So what the council have done is that, as Dean said, they've set that in terms of the planning reserve. So we couldn't spend it on something else in any case, but it's been kept in reserve, and that's now what is being used.
But we can't use that indefinitely.
No, it is for a specific purpose, which is at the moment to get that backlog down.
So how can we plug it?
The idea of the reserve is that it will continue to build up. You use it, but it's not... because it's to do with uplift of fees. And as I said earlier in my presentation, the fees aren't being increased from next April as well. So the reserve doesn't go and it disappears completely, it will build back up. But it's important that we use that money efficiently so that we do get backlog down. The issue that we have, again, it was in the presentation, but planning departments have had shortfalls.
Sorry, so how are you going to use the money efficiently to make sure we don't create a...
Using it efficiently by appointing agency staff, managing those effectively, making sure that we're getting the numbers of decisions and getting the backlog down.
Do we need to start training staff so that it brings the costs down a bit?
Staff are trained and they do have ongoing professional development.
We've got spaces for, we've got unfilled posts.
We have unfilled posts because of the recruitment issues. When we've gone out externally, it's been difficult.
We have unfilled posts at a senior level, not ones where we could bring somebody in off the street and start training them. It's higher up than that, I'm afraid.
I think it's very fair to say that the use of graduates has been extremely successful over a long time. Both John and Michelle are nodding their heads. We've brought on some really excellent planners from general university degrees, first degrees, and it's worked well. And as John has just said, that's probably the way that this authority has to go forward, because we can't afford to pay the top rates that the private sector is paying. So, and I understand that very, very well.
Well, perhaps we can offer more in terms of training opportunities.
They get trained on the job. That's part of the exercise that takes place. And they're sent off to university as well to do degrees and do planning specialist diplomas. So that works. I think Marnie was next and then John again.
As far as communication is concerned with members when it comes to callings and applications in their area, I know that we had one come to the planning committee that was about 2 years in the waiting. How are we ensuring that we're keeping all forgive me, I wasn't happy. Did it
I think that was, if I may, Jan, it was the one about the nursing home in Pentside.
Yes. Yeah,
and it had been called in by Councillor Edgler, and yeah. She'd co op, because it was a different ward to her, she'd co op to myself and Marnie to sign in to make it a 3-member call in. But it was that far back, we'd forgotten about it, and because we hadn't been really kept in the picture on it, I think that's what Marnie's trying to say.
Absolutely. Obviously, it caused a lot of confusion because nobody knew what was going on, what it was about. And I think if we'd have been kept up to date, although I appreciate from obviously the evidence that you've produced and shown us in the presentation tonight that it's been a very difficult few years as far as the planning group are concerned. It would have been nice to have perhaps had a little bit more engagement with whichever officers were dealing with that particular application, and I think it would be good to try and ensure that in the future members are kept engaged and up to date when it comes to callings.
I think in terms of that application, I know which one you're talking about, and the scenario on that application is quite unique in the sense that when the application was received back in 2020, there was an objection in principle to it by the Environment Agency, based on the understanding that the previous permission had expired. What subsequently happened is that the discharge of condition was appealed against. And once we got an appeal decision in January or February this year, which decided that no, it hadn't, they then had a fallback position. So it went from being a straight refusal situation to one where we then had to consider the various things. But until we had that appeal decision, the situation was very different. I understand what you're saying in terms of the calling was that long ago, and that was probably the oldest one at the time. But when I look down here, we've got about 50 call-ins at the moment. About 50 of those applications are called in. So, and some of them are by one member, some of them are by two members. One of the things we've had to do recently with the change in members in after the May elections, we've contacted members of about a dozen of those applications where the member's either no longer a member or has become a member in a different ward, contacted the new members, and some of the people around this table have taken on those call-ins. So we've managed to do that and to update them on where we are with that. But yes, I acknowledge that we don't update members on a regular basis. It's only when we get a report ready that we've then come to you with, this is what our recommendation is, here's a copy of the draft report, etc.
Can I just expand on that? I think it'd be useful, very often the planning officer will simply send the reference. If they could send the actual details of what it's about, particularly one that's long-standing, it would just be helpful. I have gone back to one
we
or two of them,
do
and,
that
they're,
now.
And they're doing that now, that's fine. And actually even just picking up the phone and giving an update would be quite useful.
Chair.
Yeah. Dean, sorry. On this call-in.
Stick
with call-ins
yes,
for a second. Yeah.
I just wanted to say that I thought we weren't going to go over historical cases.
No, we weren't.
I was going to make a general comment about the comms, if that's okay. So firstly, yes, we acknowledge that there will be individual cases where case officer has not provided the update, and you know, we do acknowledge that thing. Firstly, just to say, whether it's call-ins or a particular case, obviously John and the team, first point to call, I'm obviously here, and I would ask members, please feel free, if you want to escalate it, or just pick up the phone or have a conversation, I can speak to John or the case officer and move things along. So that is a kind of open offer to all members, and we will aim to get that right. It's something we can work on, but for all the reasons I've outlined in the presentation, we are where we are. The second point was there was a comment about new members meeting staff, and I think, again, we can facilitate that. Wednesday, my experience, since I started the role, tends to be the day when most of the team come in. So if there are new members or
current members
who want to pop in and say hello or introduce themselves to case officer, that's a sensible idea, and more happy to facilitate that. So we don't have to make appointments, just come and say hello. But I think that member officer relationship and just bring a face to a name is really important. So just want to make that offer as well.
I think it'd be helpful that for the member not just to have to wander in, but just to be able to notify you and ensure that there are people there that they can come in and see, because some are coming from a distance. I'm just sticking with the call-in. The one thing that that really bothers me is the reduced call-in times and the reasons for them, and some of them are so short it's almost impossible if it's over a weekend and you're away actually to get a call-in in, and that's happened to me 2-3 times this year. John, I know you've given me answers, but I'll have a public answer.
There is a reason for that, in the sense that the reduced call-in applications are ones where they are prior approvals. So if we don't determine the application by a given date, it will automatically be approved. So it doesn't make sense to enable 21 days for you to have a call in to a committee that's going to be too late to make a decision before it's been approved. So hence, that's the reason why. It is something that's it's in the constitution to have a shorter call-in period where that's necessary. Obviously, we prioritise the validation of those type of applications, so they're not sitting there for 3 weeks before they're validated. They get picked up as soon as they come in, because there's that short time period that we've got. It partly depends on when the date falls, because obviously with a committee every 3 weeks, it sounds like you've got a lot of time, but because you bear in mind going back from that, you've got to publish the agenda 5 clear working days beforehand, so that's over 4 weeks back, and these are applications that are 56 days, so 8 weeks. You've got a very short period, so the case officer needs to know that it's going to be a committee application almost as soon as they get it, so they can work to that deadline date for the only committee that it could go to within time.
And I think it's useful for members to understand, because we get the sheets, but it just says reduced call-in time. Might be helpful to have an explanation at the next training session or whatever it may be, that people can understand what's going on. We've got Julie next, I think. We look like in, John.
I've already said it was about historical applications. And
that's fine.
Can I just put in?
Peter,
pardon my ignorance, Madam Chairman. I know everybody else in the room except the gentleman there who came in late. And I don't know who he is. Do we know who he is? In case it's a spy from Canada or something.
Not spy. I'm just an observant.
So you're an observer.
That's fine.
Did you
want
to? Yes.
Could I?
Sorry, John first.
Go on. Thank you. One of the main points about the presentation that you had was the backlog, and obviously that has knock-on effects with finances, with timings, with all the other bits and pieces. Do you have, at present levels, in the fact that you are getting back on track and the numbers are getting better, do you have in your mind a time when you think that bad luck will be not gone completely, because I don't think that's possible, but it's certainly back to manageable levels that maybe they were 3 years ago?
That's a very good question, and I'm not going to be able to give you a time frame. I think the chair made a suggestion earlier around an update in 6 months, and I think that would be a good time for us to come back and assess where we are with that backlog. But as much as I would like to, I think John and I have discussed that it is difficult to make predictions based on the current trajectory, and you know, the number of applications that come in each month differs. We see a bit of a slowdown in the summer, but then we will see more during the autumn. So it is really difficult to make that kind of prediction. Certainly by 6 months' time, I would want this to have made really good progress, but you know, I'm not able to say the backlog would be cleared. So I'll come back in 6 months, but more than happy in the meantime to give members updates.
I think at that point it would be useful to put enforcement in to the, at 6 months as well, to see how that's progressing.
In the kind of future scoping, you talked about the possibility of shared service with Canuck, but we've also heard that they share some of the issues. How much would that solve the issue moving towards that, or would it not?
I think there will be challenges going forward because of the issues around recruitment potential. It's not going to go away, but I think bringing the shared services creates that opportunity to look at how we create that structure that gives planning officers an opportunity to come in at apprentice level or graduate level and move up towards senior planner, team leader, and potentially manager in the future. And I think having a bigger team, bigger workload, with the case numbers between Canuck Chase and Stafford, that gives that volume and I think variety of workload. You put the two together, you actually, it's quite an attractive proposal. And at the moment we're seeing a lot of young planners in particular, they get attracted with roles in unitary authorities or private sector. So I think bringing them together long term gives us that opportunity. The point was made around training and development, and I think we want to create those opportunities at that level, but it's probably going to be on that shared service footprint. So it's not going to magically solve all the issues, because I think the planning issues, as I've outlined, they are national. We are not alone, and it's not going to be sorted out overnight, but it should put us in a strong position, particularly around resilience, because obviously you can manage peaks and troughs in workload. If there's a bit of dip at Canuck, but there's an increase at Stafford, hopefully we'll be able to switch people around without having to bring agency workers in. But that's kind of a longer term plan. So that's kind of what my position would be, Tim, offer a different
Chair, I think we would want to resolve a lot of the performance issues that we've had over the last couple of years before we sort of bring the two teams to get together. But there will also be other factors that we drive us. In that, we've mentioned earlier about wanting to make sure that we've got the same software and so forth. So we're putting together a transformation program across all of the services, and I think we will look to see where this one sits best. But we want to resolve the issues that we've currently got. First of all, we may face some questions from Canuck members wanting to make sure that it was a robust service before we put the two together.
Just before I bring anybody else back in, this business of software and the IT systems has been rolling on for the last 7-8 years. Michelle probably has actually got the dates when we were going to introduce it, and our IT department wasn't involved. It was going to be managed out externally. Then another department decided they wanted to be part of it, so it's been held back for that. Now it's been held back for the last several years because of the affiliation with Canuck. Can we be assured that actually that's going to happen? Because I honestly believe that part of the solution to the problems that we've got in the planning department in terms of delays and so on is the fact that we are not we're not digital. And an awful lot is going on bits of paper or systems that I don't understand, but don't seem to me terribly efficient. And I'm not sure who takes command and control. You and I have had good conversations about this, Tim. I've talked to John in the past. I haven't talked to Dean. I've talked to Michelle. And it's always going to happen tomorrow. It just seems to me one of the most important things that we need to be doing to streamline the service that we've got here.
I think, Chair, if I may, and John, very free to disagree with me on this, I think we need to optimise our use of the service, the software that we've already got, and make sure that our processes are fit for
purpose, and then we're looking for a bigger digital transformation across the authority with other services, and we're looking for when the optimal time would be to do the planning service, and I think that would be part of bringing the two services together. So if we crack the backlog that we've got, and I think we've made a good start on that, we will then be in a really good position to bring the two teams together, and at that point share that software solution at the same time.
Are we using the system better than up to the maximum potential?
No, I don't think we are. I think there are things that we can do that would improve that.
So we challenge Dean to take that upon himself as well.
Again, we have talked about that, and there are things we can do within the system that we're not doing at the moment.
Okay.
Again, we will look at that.
We'll perhaps raise that again in 6 months' time. I can't remember who it was next.
It was me, actually. You've asked me three times.
Sorry.
Can I just run through the process? Dean's mentioned pre-validation being brought back. When we did have it, I'm sure that created a better state of applications going for validation. After it's validated, it's then passed to a case officer. The case officer then does the site visit, does his report or her report, and then passes it to the team leader. If the team leader disagrees with that, I assume it then goes back to the writer. Or if he does agree with it, I believe it then goes up a further step and goes to you, John.
No, I don't see most of the reports.
Oh, I was going to believe you did.
We've got...
Because I'm going to think it was a bit bureaucratic.
I would agree with you. I see most of the reports that go to committee. I see certain other reports, but I think we've made 7 decisions today, and I haven't seen any of those.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Oh, it's Marnie, sorry.
I'm just sitting quietly in the corner today. A couple of things. First point I'd like to make is, we've had a lot of kids today that have received their A-level results. It would be nice to consider that not everybody is the right fit for university, and perhaps it would be nice for the council to look at employing A-level leavers, or school leavers in fact, to come and work their way through the planning or any other department in the council.
Apprentices,
and also YTSs, as we used to call them. I just wondered, backlog versus process currently, at this moment in time, on a kind of weekly basis, what sort of percentage of applications are being looked at from the backlog versus the newer applications? Do we have an idea of what sort of percentages we're looking at? I know it's not an easy question.
It's quite difficult to answer that question, because every application we've got, that's 675 that we've got on hand, they're all allocated to a case officer. We haven't got any sitting on the floor or anything like that. They're all digital anyway, so not paper files. So they're all with case officer, but as I said before, some of the case officers still have high numbers. So there's a limit to how many things you can deal with at the same time. So in terms of the case officers, they're progressing applications, so they're doing consultations on them. They're receiving responses back from the consultees. Sometimes they'll identify an issue, and then they've got to go back to the agent to look for amendments or so on. You've got neighbour consultation responses coming in, which again might identify issues, so it's doing that. So they've got to progress those to a certain extent before they can write a report. But not all of the applications that each officer's got are planning applications. Some of them, for example, as I said, were prior approvals, so for example, phone masks and things like that. Because they work to a different time scale, sometimes you've got to put a planning application down to deal with a prior approval so that doesn't get approval by default. Mm-hmm. Then thrown into the mix, some of the refusals we've got, you get appeals against them. The planning inspector put on very tight deadlines for doing responses to them. So For example, we have to turn things around in 7 days quite often for the planning inspectorate to then take a while, shall we say. So you can map out what you're trying to do in terms of any given week, in terms of I'm going to do a report on this, that and the other. But then because of other things coming in, sometimes that changes. So, and that's why we've tried to, with most of the officers, mix a caseload in terms of some old ones, some new ones, so they can be doing different elements on different applications within the same sort of day or 2 days, so on. So I'd like to think that we're progressing all of the applications we've got, but I know very well that if you've got 90, 100 applications in any week, you're not going to look at all of them. You're not going to be able to look at all of them. Which is one of the reasons for bringing in additional agency staff, to reduce the average number per case officer so that they're able to progress more applications within any period of time. Because otherwise you end up having more dialogue with agents explaining why you can't deal with their application at the moment than actually progressing the application.
Not straightforward at all.
Thank you. It's Doug.
Yeah, and just to say that as a new member who has learned fields development and two call-ins that I've adopted, I've had great support from the planning officers thus far, and had them answered questions and kept in touch with me. Brilliant.
Very good.
That's
Julia.
Thank you, John, for your informative replies on what I think is quite a lot of process. We're going through a lot of process here in detail. A lot of it relates to historical periods, really. So I just hope we can move forward now on the agenda.
Yes, it's critical to the way we go forward. That's the point, I think. And in terms of meeting government guidelines, it's also, well, government targets, it's also critically important, because we could find ourselves in trouble if we don't meet the government's targets. So it was good news to have that, albeit that it is guided by the fact that we are having an awful lot of agreed extensions, which, as Dean said, we're reducing. I think it's such a critical service, we do need to keep our eye on it and keep reviewing it. And I'm looking at the cabinet member, and who's very conscious of all these things, I know, and meeting monthly, you said.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. I think the outcome really is that we've had an explanation of everything that we can possibly think of. I think it'd be sensible to bring it back in 6 months' time, Dean, just to see what the update is and how we're progressing. I just got one final question. You're talking about pre-apps and having put them on hold. What we haven't talked about is charging for pre-apps, and I'd very much like that to be on the agenda in 6 months' time as well.
Can we also, through you, Chair, can we also discuss the enforcement?
And enforcement, yes, I mentioned that as well. Dean, sorry.
Yes, we can obviously talk about pre-application and where we are with that. We will need to look at charging. We are looking at that, and kind of Chase will need to do that in Stafford as well.
Okay.
We are looking at planning performance agreements as well, which are a tool that we can use with developers, and that is a very well-established tool that we want to introduce in Stafford, and we can provide more detail on those and progress, but that is part of our improvement plan.
And we mentioned very briefly the involvement of our specialist people.
Yes.
It would be helpful to have a bit of an explanation of the way they get involved when we do the next review, and also our relationship with highways.
Yes.
Yes. We might actually even ask Highways to come in and explain themselves.
Mention statutory consultees. And
statutory consultees, yes.
I just wondered, given all the pressure that the staff have been under over the last few years, are we still looking after the mental health of the staff in the planning department? Do they feel like they're being looked after?
I think that's quite a... I think obviously the
I
team
think it's
it is extremely important, and again, we talked about bringing the additional resourcing because we recognise that case officers have had completely unsustainable cases. We couldn't possibly expect them to perform their roles with those levels. So we bought resourcing. I think we've seen the benefits of that, and obviously having the additional team members, as John and I have outlined. You know, introducing regular review meetings, caseload reviews, but also checking in with staff is really important. So it is important to have our eye on that, that we're checking in with our staff, making sure their well-being is also monitored and provided with any support that they need. But I think from my point of view, the team have responded really well over the last few months. I took this post up in April, fully aware of issues, but the team is working hard, and Tim and I have said, you know, good progress is being made, but we need to keep the foot on the pedal, and hopefully in 6 months, Chair, we'll be able to provide an updated position, which is even better.
Thank you very much.
Through you, Chairman. Just so long as, obviously when we're talking about the staff, we're talking about Michelle and John as well, because of their levels. It's okay they're looking after everybody else, but they also need to be looked after as well. And I think it needs to be mentioned.
Thank you. I can't speak on behalf of Michelle, but we do have regular meetings.
And thank you to all the team, but particularly thank you for the presentation that you made, Dean, and the very good explanation that you've given us. And I think we can now move on to the next agenda item, which is economic growth. I think that's you, Michelle, isn't it?
It is. So when we have a meeting in July, would it be the first scrutiny of this news of the year? I explained the background to this report, and I know there's a few members here tonight that weren't here last time, so just very briefly, this is a report that comes to every scrutiny meeting to give updates where there's been significant progress across projects that the team are working on. You won't see every project referenced in every report because of the nature of the work is that sometimes there'll be periods where there's less activity to report on. However, you will see, particularly the future high streets projects at the moment, they tend to be reported every time because there's actual physical work on the ground. So if it's okay, I was going to just talk around the updates that I've given, but happy to take any questions as we go along if that's... Okay. So in terms of Market Square renovation, everyone can see that that work is progressing. Since I last did an update, there's been quite a lot of work on the actual highway area of the square. So although it's in effect pedestrianised, we know that vehicles use that area. And part of this project was to realign the road. So we had quite a quirky sort of, looked a bit like the river on EastEnders tiles, and we've basically made that to reflect the shape of a traditional square. So in doing so, the materials are slightly different on the highway, so where you've seen the herringbone pattern going down, that's basically that realigned highway, and part of the rationale for doing that was to make sure that vehicles stick to the right part of the square, because that's been some of the issues with the maintenance, where vehicles were going on parts of the square that they weren't intended to use. So we're hopeful that that will now cease because it's very obvious where the road is, and we're still on track for autumn completion. So what you will find over the coming weeks is more bits of the relayed square are coming back into use. So I think the other day we walked across a new bit, it become open because that work is now completed, and that will just increase as we go forward now through September. Okay.
Can I just ask what the river looks like on EastEnders?
Like this.
Meanders. Can I just ask a question, Michelle? Have we thought about the charging regime when...
Yes. Yes. So basically, now that we've kind of got to the very last stages of the physical works and we've got an idea of what's going to be available when we reopen the square, we're now looking at the terms and conditions of hiring out the square, particularly from a technical point of view. So don't try and tether anything in these areas and these are your weight loads, but we're also looking at the terms, the pricing and the mechanism for actually hiring the square and the kinds of things that will take place.
Great, thanks.
Question, Chair.
Yep.
You say that the Market Square is going to be complete by autumn.
Yes.
Now, in autumn,
yep.
That includes the period when the Christmas lights go on.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm very concerned with this being in my ward, that the Christmas lights are going to be switched on this year.
They will be. They will be.
Tim is going to intervene here.
I'm sorry, I wasn't going to talk about the Christmas lights. It will be open well before the Christmas lights.
You're ready for Halloween?
Yeah, I was just going to ask that.
I personally, I don't celebrate Halloween. So. the other point I want to make, if I may, Chair, is the Borough Council has agreed to take on the future maintenance of the square. Having invested so much money and attracted so much in with investment from government to do this, we want to make absolutely sure that square remains in very good condition. So whilst highways will retain the maintenance of the road as it goes down through the high street, we will take on the maintenance of the square itself, because we don't want a future patchwork quilt of
there's tarmac down there now.
When it's completed.
Yeah, if I could just mention the tarmac, because I know this has been on social media. Because of the nature of laying that highway, you can't lay it all in one day. But because we need to maintain access through the square and to the businesses around the periphery, there will come a point where you need to make the area safe temporarily until you get that herringbone down. So yes, there is some tarmac there, and no, it won't be safe.
Was there a reason that it was yellow?
The design of the layout of the square, it's not just yellow, and I wouldn't say yellow, but the colours basically pick out the historic design of the Shire Hall, so that was an important part of the design brief, and the way that the colours fit together, that's something that we ran past our disability accessibility consultants to make sure that we weren't causing any issues for people with visual impairment and that kind of thing.
It's a sand column which will complement the building. Actually, I went down just before this meeting, and the beams look absolutely fantastic. And when the surfaces are all cleaned off and it's complete, I think you'll be really pleased.
Carry on.
Okay, thank you. So, the second project that you will see on the ground is the works around what we're calling station approach. So this is basically the area in front of and to the sides of the railway station. So again, we're looking at accessibility around this space. Anyone that's kind of used that area prior to the road opening, the Western Access Road, so the Unicorn Way through to Castlefields, before that road opened, this was a very congested area of the town, not particularly inviting to pedestrians. So knowing that volume of traffic was going to calm down, that was part of the rationale for taking on this project. But alongside that, we are also improving the pick-up and drop-off areas outside of the station. And so we have concluded the procurement process. We have a preferred contractor, I can't say the name just yet, because we're going through the process of appointment. But as soon as we can, we will share that information with you, and we're looking at a start on site within the next few months.
On that, I've had lots of questions about what is it going to look like, what is the kind of intended outcome, and there's very little information about that.
So we've shared a couple of images when we've done previous press releases that give an idea of what the scheme looks like. There's a final detailed iteration of the design to be done by the contractors that we appoint, and we will share that, and that will actually be, I think we're going to display that in and around the station as well, so station users are clear on what's coming and how it's going to be managed.
Another, I know that the station is a high litter area, because people will leave the train station, in particular smoking litter. Is there any consideration for how that might be addressed in the design?
So we've worked with Avanti, who are the train operating company that basically run Stafford Station, and they've been involved in all stages of the design, and where they've had a particular issue, we've built that into the design. Off the top of my head, I can't remember litter coming up in those conversations, but I can certainly look into it and just make sure that's nothing that we've missed.
Thanks. Miss Brooke now.
Okay, so when we met in July, I mentioned that we'd got quite a large piece of work ongoing around the strategic outline business case for the new railway station. So for anyone that read through the local plan consultation this time last year-ish, there was reference made to a piece of work looking at the feasibility of a railway station within the New Garden community. It's a very large piece of work, but it is coming to conclusion. So we have a draft report that officers are now basically going through line by line to make sure that's basically a finished product. So by the time we next meet, which I think is it November? Yeah, we should be able to give a bit more detail on that then.
But we've also got it as a substantive item in January.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is going through the local plan process as well.
So Meesbrook is yes, yeah.
Okay, Westbridge.
Okay, so at Westbridge Park, I think there was a press release on the Woodland Play Trail now being open to the public. The Sunken Garden at the point of publication was nearing completion, and work was started on multi-use games area. The wheeled sports area work is due to commence within the next few weeks, as I understand it, and the November completion for the project as a whole, we're still working towards that date.
Okay.
The Century Garden. A lot of residents are asking about when it might be completed. It's supposed to be done with natural materials, and at the moment it's just huge big lumps of concrete. Will it be planted?
It's natural materials, Chair.
Is it? Okay.
Down there yesterday.
Just doesn't look like it. Yeah. Will it be planted?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Can I just ask? So the work will works be completed in time for any celebrations to take place on Westbridge Park itself?
Did you got any celebrations?
I don't know. Let's just say the 50th November, for example. There won't be the ability to
Chair, if I may, we won't be having bonfires on the.
Move on to all the grants.
Yeah.
Pick out the bits that are significant.
So slightly different. So this then moves on to our funding streams under the UK Shared Prosperity Fund. So since we last reported to scrutiny, we've been given the go-ahead to start spending the second year's worth of funding. So there's a list of projects within the report. We're now able to activate the funding related to those. So we basically had to have an investment plan where we said, this is how we're going to spend our money. We then have to be given the green light to do it. So effectively, a lot of the work is front-loaded with this. And as soon as we're able to start making payments and grants, we can hit the ground running. So there's a good mixture in there from big projects like Staffordshire History Centre that we're basically part-funding towards, down to the Westbridge Park car park improvement works, and then grant schemes in there as well. So there's a good mixture of different elements of support across the community there.
Got a question there.
Do you have an indication of how much is to be spent on those projects?
Yes, so the investment plan was reported to Cabinet, I think, back in
April.
So we can share that report with you because that goes into detail on how much per project.
And you expect to spend it all?
Yes.
And same with the Rural England Prosperity Fund?
Yes. So this was basically an addendum to the original funding stream, which is focused specifically on boroughs and districts that had a particular ratio of rural area within their boundaries. So not all councils have this stream of funding. So it's a much smaller amount across the programme. I think it's 400 and something thousand across the 3 years, with 121,000 to get us started. So we've already put a call out for projects and asking for expressions of interest, so that we can then take that through to a more detailed application stage to see what we can support there.
Thanks.
Who's on the panel?
On the panel, so we have, there's a chap at the County Council who is specifically looks at rural business support, as I understand it, but I can get in the details about everybody that's on there. And obviously the team here as well.
Thank you. And the back page is just blurb. We're asked to note this report. Is everybody happy to note the report?
Yeah.
Thank you very much. We now will move on to the performance update. Who's taking that one?
I can take that one, Chair. So this is the performance update for...
I think we'll just pick out the bits that people want to
end of course
raise.
I was going to say, Chair, I mean, we have 13 projects within the economy here at the panel, and I think... in one shape or form, the Shell's probably covered most of it in the projects update. So of those 13 projects, you'll see 12 of those 13 have either been, we've got two completing, 10 on target. There's only one behind schedule, which is the local plan. And I think, Chair, we have a substantive item on the local plan on the agenda
coming
for scrutiny, so you'll get a full update on where we are with that. But overall, I think as Michelle has already set out, we're making good progress on a number of our key projects. We've included now in the delivery plan around development management performance, and we've gone through that in detail this evening. So I haven't really got anything particular, Chair, to pick out. So I think
I'll do what Jack Kemp used to do and go page by page and say, has anybody got any? So if we go to start with page 8. If anybody's...
Sorry, I had to go on page 7.
Oh, start with page 7.
The summary of slippage doesn't include the local plan, and I just wondered if that's the bit that's actually behind schedule, if we're going to summarise the things that have slipped.
That was caught up.
I think that's called an officer oversight, so yes, we're just going to have
well done.
That.
Francis, can I just want to say thank you. Oh, so much easier than... funny faces. What a difference. What a difference. I appreciate the fact that you changed all the symbols.
So I'm moving on to page 8 now. Page 9.
1.3.2 says delivery of Stafford Station Gateway. I read that, and I read the bit on the right hand side and assumed that means Stafford Station approach. Am I correct?
No.
Totally different.
Excellent.
Two projects.
Yes, I'm aware of both of the projects. It's just that I read County Council, I read Avanti, and it sounded like Stafford Station approach.
Okay.
No, it's not.
Excellent.
Okay, we'll try and make that a bit clearer for quarter two.
When that is that, so the gateway, the delivery of the gateway doesn't appear on the work plan anywhere. I just wondered if we're going to have anything coming back to us on that within the scope of this.
I don't see why not. I think it just wasn't identified.
I don't think it was identified last time, but there's no reason why we couldn't give an update at a future meeting. Yeah. We can squeeze it in.
The other one that's never on is the Eastgate scheme.
Yeah.
So Eastgate does feature within my... standing item on projects. The only reason it's not in at the moment is because the County Council are going through a procurement exercise, so there's not really anything to update. They're looking for a development partner, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
But by November, there may well be something that I can feed into that standing
okay.
report.
That's
you
fine.
Can put Stafford Gateway into the projects update anyway, but if the committee wants an item on that, we'll look at the work programme.
Eventually, yes. Our work programme's getting...
Yeah, I was mindful of that, Chair. But,
we're back to me. I'm on page 9, page 10. Page 11. Page 12.
Sorry, Chair.
Yeah.
What's the question about how the the Vista Economy campaign is going, how the our online
The Our Beautiful Borough campaign that was funded originally through, I think it was called the Welcome Back Fund as part of the COVID funding that we received.
Yeah.
And basically we've used the UK Shared Prosperity Funds to give that a refresh, because obviously the messaging around visiting Stafford now is very different to when we were within pandemic restrictions. Vista were really good at reporting back to us in terms of the reach of the campaign and the kind of impacts that's had. I don't know at what point we're due a final report, but certainly I can see if we can get an interim report to share at the next scrutiny.
I mean, just to sort of feedback, I think a couple of us felt that we haven't heard of some events that are going on in Victoria Park.
Oh, okay.
For example, directly.
Yep. Yeah. Okay, I'll pick that up. Thank you.
And just to, I mean, it comes up at the end, but we have got one session that will be dedicated to business and leisure tourism and all the issues around it. That's in March. I'm on to page 12.
Yes, Chairman. There's the government changes to planning. Will they be implemented into the new local plan?
We're currently assessing that. The government is currently undertaking a consultation, a technical consultation on the new local plan system, so we are reviewing that and we'll look to submit a response. We're doing some work at the moment just to assess what that may look like and how that may impact the current local plan. So I think, as I said earlier, Chair, we will bring a comprehensive update back to the committee. I think in January we'll have more information on that by that time, and certainly be able to delve into those issues a bit more.
Thank you. Thank you.
And also on the embed high quality design into planning policy, local design codes, it'd be very nice to have a timeline to that, when it's going to happen.
We can do that.
I'm on page 13 now. Right, page 14. We've covered a lot of this earlier. And 15.
The turnaround plan for land searches is the one that is behind the one we didn't cover.
Yep.
Obviously, there's things in terms of the relationship with council and things outside of control of us. Is there anything within our control specifically that
The short answer is no. So basically, almost every search that we do has a highways element to it. So what we do is make sure that we've completed all of the internal elements, which is mainly planning, building control and environmental health related. So we make sure our bits are ready so that as soon as we get a reply on the highway side of things, we're good to go. The county council team that deal with this is very small. They had some resourcing issues, as a lot of places have had. The turnaround times are considerably improved, but obviously it's just getting their backlog down. But as we move towards the end of the quarter, it was significantly improved from the previous quarter. And 21 days, whilst that sounds quite high against a target of 10, that is considerably lower than it could have been. So I'm not too worried about the current situation.
Thanks. Page 15, 16, 17.
Can I mention something on here? Oh, sorry, I'm looking at page
18. Well, we'll go to 18.
Can I go to 17?
Oh, stay with 17.
Yes, please. The number of sites with green flag status. We mentioned on here Eccleshill Road.
Is this, this isn't, this, sorry, I'm going to stop this. It's not our remit. I don't know why it's on here, this paper.
Sure, we seem to, I think we've sent all of the KPI.
Yes, but on this
to everybody.
This is picked up by another scrutiny.
Yes, it's community. So, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21 are not us.
Just
a what a relief. which takes us to... do we have to do anything with this? Do we have to note it?
Yes, just note
it. Are we happy to note that report, everybody? Yeah.
Yeah.
And takes us to agenda item 7D, which is the work programme. And that is set out on page 25, unless you want to go through the blur. 25. The next meeting, the plan is to look at the Stafford Town Centre Transformation Programme and the future High Streets Fund. And that would be followed by a task and finish group to look in more depth if we feel we need it in the new year. That's been that's on the back pages at T&F review early 2024. So at the end of that meeting, we'll decide if we need to look at it in more depth. The question then will be, do we need to call on other people to come and talk to us, like Town Centre Partnership, police or anybody else? So that's the November meeting. And the other important item there is Section 106 monitoring update. It would also be useful, I think, Dean, to have the SAC update at that point, if there is one. What the where the money's been spent. This is this is also developer funding that is made available for the use of Cannock Chase. Is that okay for the November meeting? I'm happy with that. And then we'd got Meesbrook and the local plan together, because they go together in January, which is just about the right time for dealing with the impending local plan. And then the March meeting is looking at biodiversity net gain, which will be in place. I think it comes in November, doesn't it? Is that right? And that will also focus on the approach to tourism in the borough. And I suggest at that meeting we ask for Charlotte, whose next surname I've forgotten,
Kane,
to come, who runs the Destination Management Partnership from the County Council. But there's plenty of time to consider that. Does that sound all right? Are there other burning things that we need to put on?
It will add to March the development management update. I'll give us the 6 months.
And we hope that we don't take an hour to deal with it in March.
We'll do a short version of what you've seen tonight. We'll
and it'll be
reported and send that out.
And hopefully, if it's so efficient, we'll have nothing to comment on. Any other items? I think that concludes the meeting. And thank you all for attending.